I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Andrew Kaufman, the author of four novels and one short story collection, joins me now to talk about his latest, Born Weird. The Weird family has five grandchildren, and each of them has been cursed by their grandmother. They call it Blurst, which is an amalgam of blessing and curse. Richard always keeps safe, Abba always has hope, Lucy's never lost, Kent can beat anyone in a fight, and Angie, she forgives instantly. These blessings end up ruining their lives, and now that their grandmother Annie is dying, she knows the date and time on which she'll pass on, she wants them all to assemble before her so she can lift these curses. What follows is a journey across the country to her deathbed. It's described as funny, quirky, hopeful, and imaginative. It's been compared to the worlds depicted in the films of Wes Anderson. Andrew Kaufman's previous books include All My Friends Are Superheroes, The Tiny Wife, and The Waterproof Bible. He was born in Wingham, Ontario, and is its second best writer. He is a screenwriter as well. Visit severalmomentslater .com for more. Born Weird is published by Random House. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Vancouver today, Andrew Kaufman. Mr. Kaufman, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good, yourself?
Good, good.
The comparison to Wes Anderson, that I can't remember where I read that. Is that something you like to hear?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge compliment. It's valid, too. I mean, I totally rip off a lot of stuff. completely. I mean, I love his static frames. I love the fact that there's a lot of... I mean, he's really conscious of making movies. There's a lot of artifice in his movies. But at the same time, the characters are completely sincere. There's no shtick. There's no ironic wink to the camera. So, and then, plus, his characters are really, really idiosyncratic, and they're obviously all creatures of his own imagination, which I also, is something that I do as well. So
it's very rich, his characters, and from what I've read of your book, yours are as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, rich or, I get the word quirky comes up a lot when people review the books, and, I mean, that's not a word that... I'm not incredibly happy with that word, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely atypical. They're definitely eccentrics. They're definitely characters who have some sort of weird, quirk about them, and then that the reader sees them through that. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely something Wes Anderson does really, really well, even like as far back as Bottle Rocket, and I'm definitely a fan of his work.
For people listening who haven't read the book like myself, the world that we go into in Born Weird, what is that world? Is it a little different than the one that we're actually in, or?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's definitely not the world that we're living in right now. Although, a lot of the book takes place in Vancouver. There's a lot of it takes place in Winnipeg. A lot of it takes place on a fictional country that is somewhere like in the North Sea called Uplifta, but. It's definitely a world that is, I mean, the idea of what I'm trying to do with the writing is that you take something that is universal and true and really, really common, and then you just exaggerate it, and you blow it up, and you make it so big that the absurdity of what you feel is, like, way more recognizable and easier to see. So in Born Weird, the grandmother is cursed, or blessed, blursing, all of the grandkids. Right, so Angie, who's our main character, she always instantly forgives, and so that's a power that has been bestowed by her family upon her. Right, so in reality, I mean, we all feel a little cursed and blessed by what our family has given us, and the sort of weird things that the eccentricities that living and being raised by these people has like sort of shifted your thinking into. Right, so it's just an exaggeration of a common thing. But in a magical way, right? So, in a metaphoric way, really.
Yeah, and their name is Weird. That's their last name, right?
Yeah. The family story is that when the great-grandfather was immigrating, they were Wads, and then there was a misspelling at when they were coming through Halifax, and the Y got changed to E, and now they're Weird.
Yeah. Is there a reason why the grandmother is dying here in Vancouver?
Well, it's kind of... there's a real life connection to that. None of the characters are based on any of members of my family, except for actually the grandmother, who is based a lot on my my grandmother, grandmother Kaufman. But yeah, she's in Vancouver just because she's like at the end of the continent. She's like she's the pioneer spirit of the whole family, and so it's like, yeah, she's the one that's the farthest west because she's breaking through, right? And she's a total matriarch, so setting her in like the most frontier sort of aspect, or you know, culturally anyway, of Canada was just, that's where she needed to be.
Do you like coming out here?
Yeah, I love Vancouver. I love it. I could never afford to live in your fair city, but I love that the mountain is so close to downtown. I love that the city is so walkable, right? Like, it's really, really, really nice that way. It's incredibly clean, and I'm not crazy about the rain, I have to say. I think, I don't know if I could go, like, 29 days without seeing the sun, but yeah, I love the feel of it. I love the fact, I live in Toronto, where we really, really try to kill nature. We don't really like it so much, so we do everything we can to remove it at all possible times. I love the idea of just kind of actually having it be part of your city. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. What does Born Weird say about family?
I think it's, I mean, the final point of both Born Weird and family is that it makes you who you are, whether that be good or bad, positive or negative, curse or blessing, right? It gives you all your greatest strengths, and it gives you all your greatest handicaps. And the thing is that it's impossible to separate those things, right? That what you learn from your family isn't, you can't take all the good things and put them in a pile, and you can't take all the bad things and put them in a pile. They are inexplicably, or inacceptable, you can't take them apart. They're entwined, right? So you just have to accept that. You have to work through that. They're the people who love you more than anybody else on this planet does, and at the same time, and because of that, they're the ones that can be meanest to you and cruelest to you, and they can touch you and hurt you in places that no one else can get to because they know you so well. So, and they also, you know, they give you all your greatest strengths, and they'll be support you, but they'll also be the first one to tell you when you're not working hard enough, and they won't let you sneak anything by, right? So that, you know, that's family. That's what family is. It's like, it's the only home free space you have, and sometimes inside that safe zone is the most dangerous place you can be, right? So paradoxical in nature, but really, really vital.
What was your own childhood like?
Oh, my, it was pretty, I had a great childhood. I come from a really stable family. Both my parents are still together. My mother's a librarian. My dad's an accountant. We, like, wrote everything down. I grew up in a small town off of Lake Huron called Wingham.
Yeah.
You know, I played baseball and hockey and had friends. No, I didn't have, as far as the cliche of the writer who is working through childhood drama in fiction, that is not my experience. I'm really blessed with a great family. My family is very, very supportive of me, and kind of always has been.
So what you work out in your books is, I guess, the fantasy part. I mean, the fantastic, you want characters to have superpowers because you probably didn't have any growing up, maybe?
Well, I don't know if it's that. For me, it's metaphoric, right? Like, it's like, I mean, you don't have to have some sort of huge trauma in your growing up to have things to work through, right? And I think that's one of the things that you know, the fiction that really speaks to me acknowledges, right? Like, you don't have to be fleeing an epidemic or a war or have, you know, lost a parent to really have issues of personality and conflict. And, I mean, just growing up in a supportive family is hard, right? It's like, you know, there is a certain, even outside of something horrible happening to you, even in those environments, it's hard to learn who you are and to figure out how to live life and how to push away what some of society is telling you and focus on what you really need to do, right? Those things are hard. And no one I know has done it without making a lot of mistakes. So, yeah, I think that the angst that I write about is definitely everyday angst, right?
Well, what do you think you reveal about people in your work? Taking the characters into this sort of unique world of your own, this sort of tweaked reality, that is, to use the word that you hate, quirky world.
Yeah,
I mean, you reveal something about people, just like Alice Munro does in her book.
Right, okay.
But her books are different than yours.
Yeah, she's doing it with realism. But, you know, it's a good point, because I feel like we're kind of saying the same thing, right? It's like the common experience. So, I write stories, I write love stories about how hard it is for a couple to stay together. I write stories about how hard it is to cherish your family and to cherish the people you love, right? I just do it by using metaphor and allegory and exaggeration. But, yeah, the stuff that I'm saying, basically I'm saying we should all be nicer to each other, and that is very hard, right? I mean, I'm not a writer that has this. I have no epiphanies to offer other than that. It's like, you know what? I just think we should be nicer to each other. Really, honestly, that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, and that the other thing is, I really love redemption. So a lot of my stories involve redemption somehow. And you know, one of my main themes is that you know, it's never too late for redemption. That's the beautiful thing about it. But it's hard to pull off.
You invoked Alice Munro in your bio.
Yes.
Was that to draw the comparison that your books are different than hers?
Yeah, well, I just think it's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's like, come on, I'm a published writer. It took me so long to become a published writer. I worked so hard to learn how to write and to you know, to publish books. Every novel I write is really hard and taxing and kills me. And yet, in a town of 3,000 people, I am by far the second best writer that's ever come from there. It's like, wow, it just seems that's so, you know what I mean? That's life, right?
Yeah.
It's like you get everything you want, and there's still 10,000 people who are kicking your ass.
She means a great deal to you people, you people as writers.
She's the shit, man. Yeah. It's like she, I mean, I acknowledge that obviously, me and Alice Munro and I have a totally different approach to plot. And I like a lot of plot, and I like it funny, and I like it fast. And I understand that a lot of people can look at an Alice Munro short story and just, like, not know how to even enter the story because it doesn't really seem like anything's happening. I understand that there's a boredom factor to a lot of her work, but at the same time, it's like, she's a great writer, right? Like, she is, her structure is fantastic, her subtlety is fantastic. She's one of those writers who you read and you have a certain opinion of a character, and nowhere in the page, nowhere, you can trace it back through everything, and there's like some combination of adjectives has made you feel like this character is bad, but there's nothing ever in the prose that inadvertently states this character is bad. And it's like, to pull off stuff like that, like, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an author on this week who talked about it in another interview about how he had waited on her. I mean, you get the sense that this is someone who is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
Not just as a writer, but in terms of the impact that they have on just meeting them, even.
Yeah, well, I've never met her, so...
Yeah. But growing up in Wingham, I guess she wasn't really famous until later in her life.
Oh,
she?
No,
yeah.
She was totally famous
when I was
growing up in Wingham. And I got to tell you, she was hated.
Really?
Yeah, the town did not, everybody in town figured that they were one of those characters in those stories. And if you look at those stories, you know, the early collections, like, small town life does not come off very well in those stories, right? And the people who are in those stories seem small and petty. And so everyone in town thought that they were in one of those short stories. And having lived in that town and having read those short stories, I'm not sure that they were mistaken about that.
Huh.
So, yeah, she definitely, she was not. And the crazy thing is that she lives in Clinton, which is another small town, like 20 minutes down the road. So.
Yeah. Are there people from Wingham in this book, Born Weird?
Oh, no, there's nobody. No, other than the sharks, there's nobody. All of those siblings, all five of them, are for better or for worse, kind of slices of my own brain, right?
Mm.
The problems that I'm trying to work through. So, I mean, I'm actually really happy that the book is really being well-received and people are really, really liking it. I was afraid that it was... I really believed that I'd written a book that only made sense to me, that no one else would be able to get inside. So, So I'm happy that that's not the case.
Now you tell people that your own family hasn't inspired the book, that these are, as you just said, that they're segments of your brain. They're your creation. But there must be some part of you in these characters. Even the character that you like, Kent, I know that you're unlike him. But is that then you wanting to be like that, maybe?
No, there's a part of me that there's an anger inside me that gets me into trouble. That's what that is, right? Like, anyone who is that aggressive is fearful, right? No one who feels confident and safe has to be aggressive. You're only aggressive and strong and looking for a fight when you feel threatened, right? So, yeah, the part of me that relates to Kent is that part of me that is, it's like the tiny, you know, the loudest, the dogs that bark the most are the small ones, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a big dog, if you're like a German Shepherd, you don't go around barking because you never feel threatened.
Yeah.
It's the tiny dogs who do all the barking because they're like tiny and scared, right? That's the part of me that I relate to Kent.
When you're writing, do you crack yourself up while you're doing it?
You know what? There are moments that I find funny, but I gotta, to be completely honest with you, the humor is something that just, like, what other people find funny, those are not the jokes that I set up. So I'm really happy that that people find it humorous. But I never sit down and say, oh, I'm going to make a funny scene here. Do you know what I mean? It's just sort of like, and, you know, it's not pratfall funny, right? It's not like, I'm a huge fan of Buster Keaton and the silent comedy stuff and all that sort of stuff, but it's not that sort of overt humor. I think the humor of the book is kind of a function of the absurdity, right? And the reason why people find it funny is because I think they relate to it, right? Even though it's like some sort of situation that is completely unrealistic or completely fantastic and exaggerated, I think people find it funny because it's like, well, yeah, that happens to me all the time. I mean, the base emotions that's capturing, hopefully, is what feels universal.
Did you grow up wanting to be a writer?
Yeah, I am. I'm one. I always, for better or worse, I've never wanted to be anything else.
Yeah, and you enjoyed, I mean, I know it's a job for you, but I mean, do you enjoy doing it?
In much the same way that I enjoy going for a 10K run, right? Like, there's nothing, when I get up in the morning, there's nothing I would rather do than write, but there's always a point of, and even inside that context, there's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I find it, it's hard work, right? And it's like, to make it work, you really have to face down some sort of flaw in your personality, or at least I do, right? I mean, that's how it works for me. So it's a constant, you know, you just got to work at it, right?
The characters in the book have a relationship with coincidence. They react to coincidence a certain way. How do you feel about it? I mean, are you one of these people that thinks that in life that there are no coincidences?
I think in fiction there are no coincidences, for sure. I think that anyone who puts a coincidence in a work of fiction is from the narrative voice, right? Like, this is, I'm reading a book, it's completely constructed, so I have to assume that everything that happens is there for some sort of artistic reason, for sure. Outside of fiction, I kind of have to say that it's like, no, I don't believe that every coincidence has a divine focus or a deeper meaning or a spiritual understanding or any of that stuff, but it's like, there are things that happen that take more to more energy to explain away than to just accept that something spooky is going on, right? So I am willing, on the rare occasion, to say, wow, okay, that I should pay attention to. I'm not talking about, like, you know, you get to your car at exactly the time, or, you know what I mean? Like, or the elevator opens up and all that sort of stuff. I am open to the idea that there are certain things that happen that are just too uncanny to just kind of fluff off. And I do think that culturally we need to kind of take a second look at that.
Yeah. I guess I'm an agnostic in that sense. I mean, it's like ghosts. I don't know if I believe in ghosts because I haven't seen a ghost ever. So,
but you believe in the potential of it could happen.
I mean, if it happens, then I guess I would have to believe in it if I saw it, but for now I don't.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, yeah, Ghost is a great example because there's so much obviously phony stuff going on with Ghost. You know, all the reality shows and all the mythology and all the spook stories and all that sort of stuff, right? So it's like, I feel like we're at a point right now in the culture where our cynicism is just because all of that stuff has been just so commercialized that it doesn't hold any weight at all anymore, right? Like, I mean, I can't believe, flying here yesterday, mm-hmm. they did an announcement that the new Pope had been chosen as we were, like, flying over Winnipeg or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, I don't know, I'm just really cynical. I think we're all cynical of organized religions, and we were all raised in this environment that the only way through some sort of, like, God is that we're still supposed to look through. I just feel like the spirituality has been so owned by organized religion for so long that now that we've lost all our faith in organized religions, it seems like we've lost all our faith in the idea of some sort of spiritual aspect. Right? Even saying the word spiritual makes me want to my skin crawl, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I feel like we're in a transition. Where what are you going to do? I mean, I feel like that is a component to my experience. I feel like there is a part of my daily life that is inexplicable. But it feels really. I don't feel like I have any belief system to help me interact with that, right?
You dedicate the book to Phoenix, Frida, and Marlo.
Yeah,
that's your wife and kids, right?
You bet.
How do they contribute to the writing process? Do they provide you with insight? Maybe does she read? Is she your first reader?
No, she's not actually, but she is a great story editor. The kids and the family. I mean, to be honestly, they just make me be honest. Right? There's nothing like having a 4-year-old ask you questions and you have to find real answers for that, like, make you pay attention to what you're doing and what you're thinking and the decisions you're making. And so that whole sort of, I mean, having a family has really, really, really helped my writing to a point where it's like, you know, you got to be honest. You got to know what you're doing. You got to stay on top of stuff. It's also been great because it's like you just have no time. So I used to have lots of time to, like, ponder and to think about, you know, decisions and make them 4 times and unmake them and then make them the same way. Now it's just sort of like, okay, that's you got to make stuff faster.
Yeah. Are you working on another book now?
I am.
Yeah. And it, like, you're on tour for this book, so
yeah.
You're traveling.
Yeah.
Do you write while you're on tour?
Yeah. I mean, I write every day, right? I can't not write. And I love hotel rooms. There's something about a hotel room that is just, like, it's just a really sort of nice, neutral space, right? So I actually find that sort of, I'm quite productive in these rooms, so it works for me.
Well, I'll let you go back to writing. Congratulations on this book, Andrew, and continued good luck with it. I've enjoyed this conversation. You've made me want to read the book.
Yay! Awesome! Yeah. So, thanks for having me on. It's been great questions, too, so all good from here, too.
Thank you. The book is called Born Weird. It's published by Random House. The website for more, incidentally, is at severalmomentslater.com. Andrew Kaufman on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.